I want to shift gears here a little bit because, as I said this morning, I think the White Paper Initiative is really kind of a great achievement of this organization, and it's based on a lot of volunteer hours. And the first one was really a success, and the next one is just about to be released. And I thought this would be a great time to highlight the efforts of the White Paper Committee and also give them a chance to overview the paper for us and kind of tell us what they found out, and also give us an idea of afterwards kind of the process of how we can get involved, because it's our goal to be able to release a paper every year. And so we get good ideas from folks like you in the audience and then get a group together. So I've invited Jeff Stoner, Andrew Streets, and Kelton Barr to kind of give a group presentation here on the current white paper and then kind of White Paper Initiative going forward. So Jeff Stoner will take over. Thank you.
Well, thanks for the organization for giving us a little time on this. I think, as the first slide shows, this is your paper. We're trying to represent you as best as we can. And this is the second one that we've started, and the title of it is Minnesota Groundwater Education Gaps. And the idea is, can we prepare our future students, our future public, to be better informed and make better decisions in whatever realm they're in about our groundwater resource in Minnesota. We had a great group of workers in the work group. We had nine people, and I want to rattle them off. They're not all here today, but I want to rattle them off a little bit. And I have new glasses, so if I start stumbling and things like that, it's not a big deal. Dr. Randall Barnes, he's with the University of Minnesota. Rachel Bicey, she's a geochemist. These are all members, by the way. Jonathan Carter, Barr Engineering, I think he's here. Ellen Constantine, she's with Minnesota Department of Natural Resources now. Gilbert Gabanski, Hennepin County, and consultant. Bruce Olson, and he's retired. That's not why he's green, I'll tell you that in a minute. Jeff Stoner, that's me. Kathy Undum, she's Dakota County, she can't be here, and Karen Vaz, I think, is here with Minnesota Department of Health. So we had a pretty good spread of private sector and public to try to represent you in this paper. I highlighted Bruce Olson because it was his idea. He nominated this a couple years ago, and then he decided to quit the White Paper Committee and actually work on this paper. And he was our lead author, and it was pretty easy. He just wrote down words, and we said, yeah, that looks good. I was more than that. The work group was very engaged and helped us out. So this is one of your products. And I'm gonna try. Duh. Okay. I've been retired for way too long. These are the objectives. We're trying to simplify this. And by the way, we're going to try to make this a very brief talk because we really want to engage you. I hope we draw you in to actually read the paper, which hopefully comes out pretty soon. We want to try to identify the gaps or the knowledge about groundwater in terms of high school students. What do they need to know after they graduate about groundwater? So we're trying to identify that. Identify the gaps in K-12 education. Identify some of those gaps in post-secondary, and that's targeted to undergraduate entry-level groundwater positions. And it's not just science. It could be civics. It could be anything related to groundwater. And finally, we want to try to discuss some of the alternatives of closing that gap over time. So this is kind of a broad topic, eh? So we looked at some of the questions that were being asked, and we decided we better narrow this down pretty quickly in terms of how we operate and what topics we really pursue. So the first one really is K-12. And we felt we're really not going to attack the public education at this point in time. It takes too long. But if we make some progress in K-12, it'll eventually get to the adults when they become adults. Post-secondary, again, undergraduate was our focus. And then we thought we'd look at statewide strategies. How effective are they in our groundwater education programs? Now, here's where you get a lot of credit. Two of the pieces of information we got after interviewing several experts, looking at papers that are available in Minnesota, is to look at survey results, which you guys helped prepare. So we had two surveys. One was the questions the public most commonly asked you in your professional circles. And that was kind of joined with the groundwater professional survey. We lumped that together. So that was last winter. And then we added one at kind of the last minute. We decided we weren't getting enough information about where we're at with training skills that employers need and how they match up with the training skills that are provided by our undergraduate schools in Minnesota and basically the five-state area. So we started out thinking about what are some of these questions. Let's take a look at these questions that you guys gave back to us. And some of the more popular ones, the ones that floated to the top, include, you know, what is my water well safe to drink? Or the water in my well safe to drink? That's a kind of a no-brainer, but that's a very common question. For what contaminant should I be sampling my groundwater for? Where does my water come from? A lot of people really don't know, and they drink it. And we talked about you begin to know really in a hurry when it becomes contaminated, like in Washington County. How does groundwater become contaminated? That's actually an old site of the St. Louis Park when we first discovered that we had a little problem there at Superfund before the Superfund days. Other ones that are more related to resource thinking is, are our aquifers sustainable? Are we going to be able to keep pumping them? And we saw some examples during this session about that. Do we have enough water for future generations? All right. And some questions that we kind of picked up with our interview process with some of the expertise is who really provides the expertise for our teachers, and what teaching resources are really available to them to use at their discretion related to groundwater education. And I'm talking about K-12 mostly right here. And then what statewide strategies and partnerships really address groundwater education? And that picture should recognize that is the exhibit at the Science Museum that Gil Gabansky worked with the Science Museum and the education aspect of our organization. So with that, I'm going to dive into some findings. There's a lot of findings, and a lot of what we decided to do is research what we know, put down some findings, and then talk about some implications. What do these findings mean? So what? And what could we do about it, or what could other organizations do if we partnered with them? So you're going to see a series organized as we talked about. We'll start with K-12 findings. They had 8 findings. Here's a couple of them. There really is no statewide requirements for specifically groundwater education. As far as it goes is the hydrologic cycle, and that's in the standards, and so therefore the standards have benchmarks, and that's what they test to. So I actually was having my blood drawn this week, and someone asked, what are you going to do the rest of your day? I said, I'm preparing this goofy talk for this groundwater association. And I'll be amazed that that person remembers her geology class and actually talking about groundwater. So there is something going on through the hydrologic cycle of some people remembering what they are. But is that enough? Is that the question? And then we need to expand the understanding about groundwater in Minnesota schools. We really need to integrate that with other things that they're doing, other science topics, other STEM, and then civics is another aspect of that. So one of the challenges in interviewing some of the teachers at K-12 was, don't come here and tell us we got to do groundwater too unless you take something away, okay? And so it does take a coordinated effort, and there's different ways to be thinking about how do we actually implement this kind of activity when the schools are already stressed with over-testing and meeting current standards in terms of science and education. And so we did recognize that, and we recorded that in the report. And sorry, I was way off that one, okay? That's what I was doing. Implications and opportunities, all right. So one of the implications and opportunities from the K-12 is really could we try to influence revision to the standards of science and education in Minnesota K-12? That might be an opportunity because they're going to be changing those standards in 2018 through the 2017 through 18 school year. And I was talking to someone in the audience at lunch, and they said it's probably too late for that, but let's talk about that at any rate. Here's some examples from the post-secondary. They had 5 conclusions, and 2 of them are listed here. During that survey that you all took care of, there really didn't seem to be much mechanism or formal mechanism for connecting up what the employer needs are and what the universities are providing. It's fairly informal, and there are ways that they're getting that information, but it's not very systematic. three of the 12 schools in Minnesota, we looked at 12 universities in Minnesota, and they had information about coursework that would be more advanced than what you'd get in undergraduate, which is useful if someone's thinking about a career in groundwater and they might want to go back and get a graduate degree. Some implications from this post-secondary opportunities. Here's a couple examples. The employer's interest to, there was an interest in, by the employers to improve communication, and there might be a role for us or other professional organizations to help with that. And the other part of that is well, that's what I said right there. And so there was some interest in that, and the employment realm was very interested in what we were doing with that particular aspect. And thirdly, this is the last approach that we took, the statewide strategy. And there were a lot of documented papers of agencies in the private sector that had information about how they were proposing to do groundwater education. But it was more focused on water resources in general and not very specific to groundwater. And so there was a limited detail on that. And of course, any kind of implementation requires some sort of funding, right? But nevertheless, there were some opportunities and implications that came out of that. Minnesota Groundwater Association might have the opportunity to assist with statewide strategy to improve the groundwater. There's a lot of things going on that we found out, and that's the second bullet. We found out that there's a lot of organizations that are doing really good work in their little realm, and maybe there could be a little more education or spreading that knowledge of what they've learned and how they've improved groundwater education with other sectors in Minnesota. All right, for those of you that are tired of politics and fact-checking, we are gonna give you a great opportunity to check our facts. A big part of this report is filled with detailed information. This is just one example, which you're not allowed to read on this screen, but this is just from the public survey that you provided us in terms of the kind of common questions. One surprise we learned from this, and is that of these categories of questions that public asks, chemistry or water quality were the most popular. They didn't seem to be too concerned about quantity, relatively speaking. But you can read through the gory details. There's about 30 questions, if you recall, filling out this questionnaire, which we really appreciated. It helped us a lot. Go read me. That's what we're trying to get you to do. This paper should be available to you to read. It was approved in terms of technical content by the board this week, so we were trying to have it ready for this presentation here. It's probably going to be printed in December. Basically, what we tried to do is keep the front end of the report thin in terms of the number of pages and keep it pretty brief because we were hoping for a broad audience read on that. The executive summary we hope will be read by a very broad audience. But for those of you geeks in the audience that really need to know how we got to our conclusions, there's a good 30, 40 pages of appendices that you can look at, a lot of detailed tables and graphics that you can kind of pour through. And I think the value of that's going to be is in the future of how we, what do we do with this as an organization in terms of how do we react to this publication and what do we do with it. There's a lot of acknowledgments I want to make, but let's start out with the White Paper Committee. By the way, I'm not part of the White Paper Committee anymore, but each White Paper has a liaison that works with us in terms of the work groups, and our liaison was Kelton Barr and Mark Collins, who's on his way to Arizona. He's a retired guy, too. So, but those folks really helped us, kind of guide us, and that was our go-between. If we had a technical question or a policy question with the organization, they'd work with us. So we appreciate the help that Kelton and Mark brought to us. I'm not going to read the names. Those are the technical experts underneath. Each one of those came for about an hour and talked to us, and we really gained a lot of insights on what's going on in the field in different aspects of K-12, state Minnesota Department of Education, as well as the industry. I want to thank you, too, as in terms of some of these data. We're hoping that these kinds of surveys weren't too much of a burden to you. I want to call out Sean Hunt, who helped us with the monkey surveys and really try to make them as easy as possible for you. If you have any comments on how to make those easier, I think the value of these kinds of surveys is to repeat them over time and improve our information. In particular, we're going to want to probably try to repeat the employer's survey because we just didn't get a good sample size on that. I also want to thank Manganese, the first paper, because they had pitfalls and they had successes that they shared with us, and I think that's just going to improve over time with these white papers. So I appreciate the work of the Manganese work group. And we had kind of policy or technical reviews from the Minnesota Department of Education, the Wisconsin Geological, Groundwater Association, and of course the board of this organization. So we really appreciated those comments. Ellen's not here, but she commonly pointed to me and says, gee, Jeff, kind of coordinating this group is like herding cats, isn't it? And I didn't see it that way. In fact, they're very highly functioning cats, and they're big cats. And what I'm getting at is we were really fortunate to have in our work group some critical thinkers and sometimes we'd slip on some deadlines, but if I threw a deadline out there, it was like throwing a hunk of meat in a lion's den. They really jumped on it and would get things done. So I really appreciate all the work that they did. And finally, before I quit, I don't know how I'm doing on time. By the way, I'm going to be doing Andrew Streitz's talk next, so just hold on. I got one more pitch, and if you're a Chicago Cubs fan, you'd recognize that. And this is where I'd like you to take a quick look, if you haven't already, take a look at your sheet. We thought that it was very timely, and in some cases it might be a little bit past timeliness, to suggest to the board some things we might want to do to improve the groundwater education in Minnesota based on the conclusions and the summary and the findings and opportunities that will be presented in this paper. And we kind of listed them sort of in order, but what we want to call out our attention to is we think there has been an education committee in this group. I don't know if some of you probably were on that. I talked to the people that were on that in the beginning when the association really first started, and they said, well, we had kids in school. We'd go and give talks at their grade school or their high school, and that's why we were motivated. But at that time, and then the other thing is what Gil did with the Science Museum, and that was a big event. We coordinated with the Science Museum, a local driller, and really, if you've never been to the outdoor exhibit at the Science Museum, it's really quite well done, and they get a lot of exposure, and I think they're going to be ready to do something new, and Gil's going to try to follow up on that in talking to Patrick Hamilton at the Science Museum. So why am I rattling on about this? Well, I don't think the Groundwater Education Committee is very active right now, and so one suggestion we would have for the board and for you guys is should we reactivate that and get a little more organized and coordinated on what are the highest priorities based on some of the things we came up with. Another one might be past due, but the number two is maybe work with the Minnesota Department of Education and see if we can affect any kind of change to the STEM standards that would include groundwater. That might be a long stretch, and then so you can keep on going down. Maybe there's other things we can do with lesson plans and just get more involved. I know there's a lot of people in this room that are already heavily involved. I talked to some at lunch that already do a lot, but is it a coordinated effort, and how many people are we hitting? So the key here is I don't want to show hands now necessarily, but if you really do or want to get involved with the follow-up of this report, please do contact the same people that are going to be our contacts for the white paper itself, and that's Gil Gabanski. He could stand up. Why don't you stand up, Gil? And his younger counterpart, Kathy Undum, she couldn't make it. She had a project at Dakota. Call Kathy first. Okay. So just for the yucks of it, who would be interested in working on, number one, the reactivating of the Groundwater Education Committee for the organization? It's not a commitment. Just kind of curious, who would be interested in that? Got one, two, three. We already got a committee. Look at that. If you give me the right incentives, I might come out of retirement and do that too. All right, so let's start at the questions. Anybody got any questions? This is to remind you that that's not going to last very long after this week. So, yeah. So this question is on the first white paper.
Did you ever consider reaching out to Wisconsin schools to figure out what they're doing for education purposes?
Yeah. You'll see in the report we kind of hit major schools in the five-state area. Iowa, Dakotas, and Wisconsin were part of that.
Wisconsin, Eau Claire particularly, I work really closely with a colleague. Groundwater is not my 100% expertise, but I work on some other environmental health related, and there's some good resources that are coming out of Eau Claire. They're bringing some excellent professionals into the field lately.
Agreed. Yep. Here you go.
I think that the suggestions you have for those of us that are preparing students for employment are really useful. They will be invaluable to the people who manage our institutions. And one thing that I think is really important is that you get that information to the higher level managers in the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, or it's now Minnesota State, right? So they know what is working, so they can support those of us that are teaching geology, teaching hydrology. We don't always have any control over the support that we need to prepare people for employment. So getting that information to people is important. And I know individually I can give you some suggestions as far as St. Cloud State goes, but I think dispersing that information is really critical to supporting the work that's being done.
Appreciate that comment. I don't think it was a question, but one thing we did notice, St. Cloud was a sleeper. It had a lot of course offerings that we were surprised about that we weren't aware of as a small group. So kudos for St. Cloud. But we hear you, and that's actually one of the things on the list is, does this organization want to do a forum to try to improve that communication between employers and college echelon, as you were saying?
Okay, well, thank you. I think it's a... It's a long list to digest, and I think we will going forward.
Okay.
Switching hats.
You're going to have to bear with me. I really am having trouble with my eyesight. So the next talk, Andrew Streitz has a personal emergency at his family, and so he was going to give the next update on White Paper 3, and that's going to be done by me. So here's the title. Update on tile drains and groundwater and resources and understanding those relationships. This is going to be an interesting, and like that's why I said, and now for a completely different story. This is going to be a little bit more sciencey than the one we just did, and it's probably going to be a slightly controversial. This one just got started. I think they've had about 3 or 4 meetings. And here's the progress that we have so far. They do have a good work group. I don't know if you've paid attention in the newsletter or whatever, but they have a great technical work group, as well as some people that might know something about policy. They're trying to follow the Minnesota Groundwater Association's guidance, which is thick and well-written, by the way. Okay, right there wrote it. Meet with experts in the field. They've done that already. It looks like they're outlining a schedule in the business of writing the white paper. And they will update the progress in the spring meeting. They're really just getting off the ground and getting to know each other and figuring it out. Is there anybody here in the audience that's on that team, that work group? Here we go. Got one. I think the lead author is Eric Smith. I think they've appointed that. Oh, boy, this looks like not my stock. Boy, I don't even know what this is. Oh, yeah, okay, thank you. So this is happening. The technology's out there for serving. And I know as I was retiring, the technology was incredibly changing such that you could put tile drains in extremely flat places like the Lake Agassiz Basin. And that's what this is. And so they're tile draining, whether they need to, and I shouldn't get into the politics. Anyways, they're draining things that weren't possible to drain, but the technology is there with the technology of surveying and making ditches in a hurry. So this is a big issue. There's the more visible kind, but that's still groundwater we're seeing exposed at the surface. And so this is a big issue, and of course everybody knows about the governor's concern about water quality and buffer strips. And you got to love soil. I don't know why, but but you do. And actually, if you're a hydrologist with the USGS, you'd have to have all kinds of shoring up in there because of OSHA would be all over your butt. But that's impressive. That's probably that till again that holds up pretty well. But they are. I've worked with soil science. I'm kidding. They're great, great people. That's right. That's right. And they're basically the hydrologic skin of the earth is what I've heard before. That's what's important. You got any questions for the work group that I can't answer? Andrew Streitz is he's the liaison with this group. And I think if there is no questions, I'll turn it over to Kelton, who's going to talk a little bit about the rest of the story.
Well, so we've heard about the white paper that just finished and the one that's underway. Now, as we look into the future for the white papers, we're looking for new topics. And these are all submitted by you people. We really have to rely on the membership to give us what are the ideas that we should be following up on, and what are the big things that are coming up, the big issues. And if you do have an idea, then get a hold of a simple form, put it down on paper, and send it in. And how do you find that? Well, you go to the website and click on the white papers link, and then you end up at another link for the white paper topics, and that'll pull up that form. Simple enough, right? And this is your first notice about it, but like voting, submit your ideas early and often. And no ideas ever die. We just wait their time. So we have a slowly growing queue of ideas that have been submitted in the past. And we are looking over what are the ones that are most propitious for the time, and what seems to be a common theme developing. And we go from those. The deadline is going to be in January. So you'll be getting a few more nudges about this. But it really is how we all collectively can be making a difference in the discussion of ideas and issues in groundwater. So this is where it starts with the white papers, which, as you know, are basically just neutral documents pulling together the information. This was done for the Minnesota groundwater education gaps, and it just brought a number of things that we could be proactive about, and that's what we're hoping to start in a different venue than the white paper initiative. So with that, I thank you and turn it back to Ole.